This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com. We are live at the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. Why? Because it's Thursday, and we've got the John Schneider Show coming up today at 4 o'clock. We'll be speaking with the Seahawks GM, touching on all of the things happening around the draft, the combine, the free agency, all that. He's going to give us all of the dollar amounts they are willing to offer to players out there. He's going to take us behind the curtain and unveil all the secrets, really.
I don't think it works that way, Bob. We found out, but yeah, that's exactly what we're not going to find out. But
yeah,
but yeah, we'll get a chance to just ask general questions about some of the processes of, you know, going through. And I'm curious to talk to him about Draymond Jones.
Yeah,
you know, because that's and I'm
bringing Jaron Reed back.
Yeah, Jaron Reed. That's another really interesting one. But yeah, with Jones, just curious if maybe that was somebody that they looked at and coveted over a year ago when the whole trade happened with Russell Wilson. So yeah, we'll get a nice update from him. He does a good job of giving us, you know, enough information other than not telling us exactly what they're going to do.
Not telling us exactly
what
we want to
know. No dollar amounts, when we're going to pick people.
Yeah, who we're looking at, who we're not looking at. This guy's a creep. This guy's great. That's the stuff we want. We're not going to get that. But nevertheless, John will be with us at 4 o'clock, and he's been great, man. People love hearing from him, and he's a fun guy to talk to. So that's coming up at 4 o'clock today. Paul Moyer will join us at 3 o'clock. I have fun talking to Paul. You trudge your way through it.
I talk to Moyer enough.
You're not that enamored with him anymore.
We text each other like high schoolers. So, yeah.
You know everything he's going to say.
I know. No. He'll surprise you every once in a while. But, well, you know, Paul was a good basketball coach.
I didn't even know he coached basketball.
I know. He can coach anything.
Was it like high school, junior high?
He coaches me on how to do radio.
Yeah,
it was high school when he was actually coaching with Dory Monson. And
oh, really?
Dory was a head coach for a number of years. And, yeah, both him and Ray Roberts both coached with him. And, yeah, Paul, I think one year we went out there to see Dory's team, and they won the state championship, and Paul and I drove out to Yakima to watch it. But I think he coached the year before that or something. So he knows a little bit about hoops, and I'm sure he's got an NCAA bracket. He's going to be talking some mess.
He's got some opinions he wants to share.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Well, we'll get those at 3 o'clock. And then at 5:30, our guy John Morosi will join us. We'll flip the clock. We need a long segment for John Morosi. So the 5 o'clock hour will be a little bit different, but he'll join us at 5:30, and we'll have our full segment with him, talking some baseball with him. Meanwhile, just looking at the draft, as you know, every day we'll be talking about some of these guys and how they fit and how, you know, what the Seahawks may do at 5 if they stay there and who's going to be available. Jalen Carter right now is the biggest story out there for all the wrong reasons. And, you know, obviously the accident that resulted in people losing their lives. And we just gave you the snapshot update there that he's, you know, pleaded no contest in that. And he's going to be doing community service and probation and that whole thing. Jordan Reed, who's a draft analyst for ESPN, talked about questions the scouts. He was questioning whether scouts believe he's still a top 10 pick.
Carter weighed in 9 pounds heavier than he was at the combine and elected to only participate in position drills. He started off explosive, showcasing his first round talent, but he was unable to complete the drills due to cramping. That didn't stop one scout from telling me there's still no way he sees Carter falling outside of the top 10 picks. Carter, who was hoping to provide answers, left all 32 NFL teams who were in attendance with even more questions.
Yeah, you know, the weight, it's what, 3%? Okay, I'm assuming he's around 300, you know. So 3% gain, I can live with that. But if it's why are you cramping? I mean, if you're that bloated, why are you cramping? You
should. Yeah.
I don't know if he wasn't hydrated or whatever, but one side of it is this, and I know that a lot of people have said, well, maybe he's going through some trauma and things like that because of what happened and stuff. That could be the case. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe it was just an off day. But the problem is the pattern. That's the thing I'm worried about. Because Jim Nagy, who we heard from yesterday, or maybe that was 2 days ago with Bump and Stacy, that, you know, that there's a pattern. of immature behavior, basically.
Yeah. Implying this is not a singular incident.
Right. So, I mean, that's concerning. I just, you know, we're not privy to all of the other things. I mean, you know, like we talk about with John when he comes down, they go and talk to everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, it's about how do you treat the equipment guy? Does he, you know, there was one kid I remember that they drafted and somebody said, yeah, I saw him cleaning up the locker room. Like he was picking up, you know, a lot of guys will just cut their tape off and throw it on the
ground. Throw it on the ground, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, is he that kind of guy?
I've left the Seahawks locker room with it stuck to the bottom of my shoe before.
I never understood that. I was like, I probably wasn't going to go pick up somebody else's sweaty tape job that was lying on the ground, but there's no way I was going to throw mine on the ground.
I've had it on my walk and go, what the hell's going on here? And there's a big wad of that tape stuck to my shoe. Yeah. But I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, look, that's part of it, though. I mean, it's you know, Eric Kennedy, who's the equipment guy here. Talk about him all the time. He's, you know, he was a ball boy when I was playing. He's been here forever. He's like an institution here within the VMAC. And, you know, his office is open for, you know, they have their kangaroo courts and things like that. And it's kind of, you know, the culture of the team sort of flows through there. And, you know, it's important. How do you treat those guys? So I remember Eric Kennedy. Remember when Quentin Jefferson tried to go up into the stands in Jacksonville?
And
for good reason. Like, if I was him, I would have gone after that guy, too. But the guy that was draped around his legs and pulling him down was Eric Kennedy.
Yeah.
You know, trying to save him from himself. Like, no, you can't do it. I want to hit him, too. But you can't go into the stands.
So. Yeah, he saved him from a hefty fine and maybe some litigious jerk in the stands who's talking mess and then is going to play victim.
Yeah.
You know, when he gets confronted.
Well, there were some nasty things said. So, I mean, I guess you could understand it. But, yeah, so, I mean, those are the kinds of things that, you know, maybe with Jalen Carter, we just don't know, you know. But when you hear pattern.
You and I talked on the air and off the air about that. And that stood out. And he said, hey, there are things that are out in the media. There are things that aren't. And the teams know them all.
Yeah, and he said the teams know better than anybody.
Yeah, right? So that's, you know, you. If this is an isolated incident and you're just going, all right, this is typical college kid stuff that had a tragic result. He wasn't driving the car. He wasn't, as far as I know, there was alcohol involved on his part. I haven't heard any of those details. It just had a very tragic result. And nobody excuses it, but you go, yeah, that was, you know.
Yeah.
You take it for what it is. But when you hear, well, yeah, there was that, but there was also this, and there was also the, if there is a pattern, if there is a concern about other decisions being made that aren't beneficial, then you start going, all right, how big of a red flag is that?
Well, and then the other thing it comes, and you know, what the question is, well, what if he's there at 20? Do you pick him there? And, you know, we brought this up yesterday that Malik McDowell never made it on the field for the Seahawks anyway. Mm-hmm. And he had a stretch where at Cleveland, he was actually playing well, but then I think he's out now. I mean, there was the last time I saw anything about him, he was naked walking in down the street or something.
Yeah,
so
something's going on there.
Yeah, there was a lot of problems. So, you know, if you could relive it, I mean, you wouldn't pick Malik McDowell with the last pick in the draft.
No.
So, I mean, you know, that to me, that's the question is like, okay, at what point do you compromise? You know, I mean, if he's in the seventh round, I mean, I'm being extreme here, but, you know, do you take him? I mean, that's if that's the case, if it's that bad and that noticeable, and I think it's been a long time. You know, when's the last time? I mean, the gas mask bong thing, that was Jeremy Tunsil.
Laramie Tunsil, yeah.
Laramie, yeah. I think, what did he drop? 15 slots, 10 slots?
I can't remember where. Lefko, do you remember what spot he ended up going? Because he was projected as a top five pick.
Yeah, he was pick 13th.
13th. So you'd say he was top five. Who knows if he was going to be 3, 4. You'd say he dropped 10 picks. That seems fair. And then guys have dropped for other reasons. We talked about Warren Sapp back in his day. There was a weed issue. He got caught or something, and I think he dropped. Randy Moss dropped a bit. For lesser, you know, circumstances, obviously this one with Jalen Carter, again, resulted in tragedy.
The Laramie Tunsil thing, I mean, he gets traded to Houston, and he's been a three-time Pro Bowler in the last 4 years. So.
Yeah, and you look at Randy Moss and Warren Sapp.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about, you know, Hall of Fame caliber players there. So it's you run the risk if you're looking at him going, well, I don't know. That all that stuff scares me away. You are potentially passing up on somebody that could be one of those players you're talking about for years to come.
Well, and here's the other thing, too. If you're the Seahawks, this is the team that sets culture probably better than anyone. I mean, when guys come in here, they love it. And it's like everybody's going the same direction. You know, there's not any – I mean, the last time there was, like, serious discord in the locker room was Percy Harvin, right?
Yeah, he was beating everybody up.
Yeah, he was trying to beat people up. And I guess I heard that he was, like, crazy strong. Like, there was a defensive tackle that tried to, like, contain him, and he just threw him aside like he was a piece of trash. And so, yeah, that was that was an interesting story. But, I mean, you know, I think for Pete, I mean, I don't. Maybe there are other teams that are, but maybe Kansas City with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce.
Maybe Tomlin.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike Tomlin, great culture, although he did put up with Antonio Brown for quite a while.
And Le'Veon Bell at the same time.
Yeah.
And we never heard of Pete, though. I give credit to Tomlin, man. That's impressive.
Rest. Yeah, and he didn't seem like the kind of guy he's, you know, say, what was the one thing he said? We need something, not hostages. We need, I can't remember what it was, but he was like very direct about it. But yeah, they kind of covered that up for a while. And, you know, so if you can absorb that and you think your culture is strong enough to kind of sway this kid a different way, I would put the Seahawks up there. Maybe, you know, we just mentioned two other teams, maybe three other teams that have as good a culture as that you have here. Look what's going on in Baltimore, you know, and I keep going back to DaCosta, their GM, and what he was saying about their receivers, the receivers that he drafted.
Yeah.
You know, it just seems like there's a weird culture there. You know, we hear another, was it the Cincinnati Red owner that was like, where are they going to go? They got nowhere else to go.
Careful what you wish for. Yeah, I think it was their president or whatever. But it, as far as Carter goes, you know, I look at it, and if there are more things behind the scenes that aren't public, you know, obviously all of that has to be taken into account. The Seahawks are in a position they have not been in with Pete and John, having the number 5 overall pick. I don't think you can blow this. You can't. You pick 20, 25th, 26th, 27th. All right, yeah, still a first-round pick, but it's not nearly as punitive. It doesn't feel nearly as bad if L.J. Collier doesn't work out at the bottom of the first versus somebody you pick in the top 5 and they bust out. That's a bigger deal. There's more consequence with this pick than there is a low-round pick. So you brought it up. If he, you know, hypothetically, does he drop it to the, you know, mid-teens to 20? If he's hypothetically there at 20, do you take him? I could see them be more willing to risk it at 20 than at 5. 5, that guy's got to be your guy. Yeah. Whatever position it is, whoever it is, that's got to be somebody who's starting for you. Yeah. You're picking him at 5.
Right, and he can't be a flop. He can't be a washout. And that's pretty much generally you ask a lot of, you know, and I know from talking to John over the years that like there's a lot of times they think there's like 12 first-rounders. All the rest of the first round, the other 20 picks, are not first-round grade based on what they have. So, yeah, that does make it a little bit more crucial. So, and now it seems like with all the quarterback frenzy and, you know, with Carolina trading up to get the number one pick, that maybe that those, you know, quarterbacks are going to start to drop off the board. And, you know, it's nearly an idea. I mean, maybe Arizona is the one that could pick him. And I could see them picking Jalen Carter where other teams wouldn't. It just seems like the way that they go, and just from the things that I hear out of that organization, they kind of feel like, you know, we can bring him in here. Like I used to say about Chuck Knox, and this was, you know, I'm saying this as a fault. It's really not. I mean, Chuck wanted to help turn guys around ultimately, but he did kind of think, hey, you know, I'm a father figure. I can whip this guy into shape. And a lot of times you couldn't do that.
Hey, you and I went through this exercise. What you found our list. You and I put together a list of players that were going to be free agents on this Seahawks roster. And we broke it down into 3 categories. And we went through it. We each did our own list. Players we felt need to be back. You got to bring these guys back. And then the next category was players that would be, I'd like to have them back. But if they leave, okay. You feel like you're going to be okay. And then the last category, players that I wish the best to on their journey away from Seattle.
Yeah. You
know? So this was a few months ago we went through this, and it's kind of interesting to look at. you know, where we differ, where we were the same. My players they need to retain is a very small list.
Yeah.
It was three. I had three players, and so far all three, they Geno Smith, Phil Haynes, and Ryan Neal, who they put the tag on. Those were my only three. Your need to come back list was Geno Smith, Drew Locke, Ryan Neal, Michael Jackson, Austin Blythe, Puna Ford, Rashad Penny, Marquise Goodwin, Travis Homer, Miles Adams, and Godwin Igubuke.
Yeah.
So you're a little disappointed because some of these guys are gone.
Yeah. I mean, you got a retirement out of Austin Blythe. Puna Ford looks to go somewhere else. Rashad Penny signed somewhere. Travis Homer signed somewhere. You know, going through it, I'm like, well, how many free agents are you going to sign, though? Because last year it was like eight or nine, I think, free agents that they signed in the offseason. And, you know, you got a good amount of guys that, you know, you're willing to get rid of. I'm like, okay, well, let's look at some of these. But, yeah, I really didn't anticipate that Austin Blythe was going to retire. And I didn't think he was that bad. I think a lot of people got sort of the momentum got carried away of, oh, yeah, you hear it said one place and another. And I thought he actually was okay, but he's not ideal.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's interesting. The interesting one to me is Puna Ford, that he fell out of favor that fast because he's a free agent now. Maybe they sign him back. I don't know. But
yeah, he's still hanging out there.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because, you know, I think the Seahawks were the one team with Puna that – I think they felt more highly about him than anybody else because he was a free agent, undrafted free agent. And then, you know, there was a time where he got released and he could have re-signed with anyone, and there were other teams offering him to sign him. And he was like, no, I want to stick with the Seahawks.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was a couple, 3 years ago. So, yeah, kind of interesting. But, I was just thinking more of like, okay, I don't want to stress John out by making him have to go sign 15 players that we're getting rid of here. So, but
I have even more holes to fill. Yeah. Looking at, like, on my list of players, that I said, hey.
Goodbye.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Anyway. Good having you. LJ Collier, who's out there. Artie Burns, who we never saw. Austin Blythe, I had on my list. Jonathan Abram, who they brought over in the middle of the year. Bruce Irvin, Justin Coleman, Tony Jones. And then you get into some of the names you just didn't really see much of. You know, the
you had Puna Ford in that one, though.
I did have Puna Ford in there. I just wasn't happy with him.
You wished him farewell.
I wished him luck on his journey. Colin Gillespie. Penny Hart, Daryl Johnson Jr., and Laquon Treadwell.
Yeah.
Were the guys that I had on my list and your list. You had similar names. You had Artie Burns, Jonathan Abrams, LJ Collier, Bruce Irvin, Coleman, Josh Jones. So we had a lot of the same names on that list. That's kind of proving to be true because all those guys, I don't think any of these guys are here now, right?
Yeah.
Or they're out there. They didn't bring any of these guys back.
Where do you have Cody Barton on the good to have, I think?
I had Cody Barton and a player I'd like to have him back, but he's not crucial.
But he's not crucial, yeah. That's where I had him as well, which, you know, that's how far he's fallen in my heart. Because last year I would have had him. You absolutely have to sign him. Well, let's just keep an eye on Cody Barton, okay? Let's just keep an eye on him, and we'll see what happens.
I'm pulling for him. I hope he does well out there.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking to the texters mostly.
Oh,
yeah. But they
feel like they won that argument with you. See, Dave?
They do, yeah. Well, somebody said something about how, yeah, Wyman would never be a GM because he wanted Cody Barton. Okay, thank you.
Because all GMs are batting 1,000, right?
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it was it's interesting that it's kind of fallen the way more on your side than the way I was – picking him because, yeah, it looks like they're getting pretty aggressive and signing lots of guys. And then, yeah, I just had no idea that Rashad Penny would get picked up by somebody else. And then the second most shocking thing is for the amount of money that a $600,000 guarantee.
What is veteran minimum?
It's $1,050,000, I think.
He doesn't qualify for that?
Well, yeah, he got more than $1,050,000, but $600,000 was the guarantee.
Oh, the guarantee. That's right. That's right. I don't even know if they had incentives attached to making that 1.3 or whatever it was. It's just, that's a lot. I guess if I'm taking myself out of Seattle and just looking at it from a distance, I'm going, yeah, he had a good four games at the end of that season. He looked like he was starting out that way, but then he got hurt four games into this season. So,
yeah,
I guess the idea of a big investment doesn't make a ton of sense. You know, we know him here. We love him because he's a great kid. seen how explosive he can be, but yeah.
And he did get 1.35 was the number.
Yeah. All right, let's take two.
Well, the Seahawks are getting some center depth. We talked about the lack of centers on the roster. Jeremy Fowler reports that they've agreed to terms with center Evan Brown, who started 24 games for the Lions over the past two seasons.
They need him. He's right now the starter because he's the only guy on there, I guess, outside of Joey Hunt, who, yeah, that's he's the depth, I would think. I don't know much about Evan Brown, but that's the guy right now. If we're going to throw the team out there and you had to play a game, he'd probably be your starter, wouldn't he?
I'd go with Joey Hunt, but I like Joey Hunt. I mean, he's really a smart player, but he's so undersized. You see him, like, he went on the last trip, I think, and I was like, oh, Joey, how you doing? And he just looks like a regular-sized dude.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know that Frank Ragnow was the starter in Detroit, who's a really, you know, highly thought-of center. And so, yeah, I don't know if he was backup, but, you know, I think he's one of those guys that's like a center guard type.
Well, you couldn't have asked for a better start to the NCAA tournament. And right now we got some dramatic games going on as well. Number 2 seed Arizona only leads the 15 seed Princeton by one at halftime, 31-30. How about earlier in the day? First two games came down to the wire. 8 seed in Maryland escaped after West Virginia missed a three at the buzzer, 67-65. Well, the 13 seed Furman took advantage of, and I don't think this is just my opinion here, the worst pass in NCAA tournament history, hit a three to win with 2 seconds left to win 68-67.
There's never been a worse pass in the history
of the NCAA tournament.
Than that throw?
The Kihei Clark chucked up to the heavens.
Come on. You've seen Syracuse.
Don't be
what about those
prisoner
those,
of the moment.
What about those freshmen from Purdue that you hate so much? That they
hasn't happened yet. Maybe they'll have a worse one tomorrow. But so far, this is the worst pass
in a situation like that. You're rooting for Purdue to have the worst pass.
No. He wants them to have a terrible win so he could go, see, they barely squeaked by this team. I told you. Can't count on them. Did you see
any of that game, though, the Furman win?
It was pretty exciting. I actually was screaming. My neighbors looked up at me because I did pick Furman to upset Virginia. I'm not going to talk a bunch of noise. I did look at them, and the Paladins, I thought, were, you know, a good team. They were on a roll, and so I took a shot on that one, but... some of the other ones, Utah State, I went down on. You're looking at your
right.
Bob, you're very involved with your bracket, right?
I don't know who
you
I
put
picked.
A lot of time into.
I don't know. I've filled out two brackets, and I've spent a total of 4 minutes in filling them out.
Bob went in alphabetical order.
That's exactly right.
So Appalachian you picked Houston, State. Bob. You're in good shape in our sports pool one.
Yeah, I did. I did one for LEFCO for our station that he sent out, and then one for our website. And I just boom, 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 because I want to test my theory. The more I've been in tune, the more I've known about these teams and been dialed in, the worse I've done in the brackets. And I won our pool here at work 1 year. And it was a year where I was hardly paying attention. I went through and just...
And you picked Marquette.
In one of them, yeah.
It's a good...
Marquette one, Houston in the other. So there we go. All right, Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/CyberKnifeProstate. Coming up, the worst fear of every MLB fan came true in the WBC last night. We'll get into that next with Wyman and Bob. We are live at the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
We continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. It is Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710. And watching the WBC last night, I keep forgetting it's on. So, and then I got to find out which channel it's on. It's not that easy. I'm not conditioned to watch it yet, Dave. But I was tuning into some of the highlights, and obviously we had a big low light last night, which featured a former Mariner who's now the closer for the New York Mets, Edwin Diaz. Strikes out the side, ends the game. Tremendous win for his team. They all converge onto the mound. Everybody's jumping up and down. And then all of a sudden you see the crowd of players start to part. And then you see there's somebody laying on the ground, and it's Edwin Diaz. And you're going, oh, no, what is going on? And then it was I didn't see a good video that you could get any clear idea as to how it happened. But what did happen is he tore the patellar tendon in his right knee. They ended up taking him off the field in a wheelchair. with his leg extended. Yeah. They, you know, they were cutting to his brother who was out there crying, and it was just, man, it was heartbreaking to see what was going on. And then you get the news today that it is a patellar tendon tear in his right knee that he suffered in that celebration. He's going to need surgery and is expected to miss the entire season. And that's what we talked about going into these, you know, going into the WBC, which is huge for a lot of these players to represent their country. But if you're a GM, if you're a manager, if you're an owner, if you're a fan, aren't you? Yeah, you're rooting for the U.S. or you're rooting for whichever team. If you're Brent, you're rooting for Canada. But but you're, more importantly, aren't you just going, please, please don't get hurt. Please stay healthy.
Does this figure into it, though? I mean, this is such a fluky thing. I mean, this is how I think to me, I freak out every time I see guys run towards each other and jump up and bump hips up in the air because, you know, you hit the other person, you're going to come down awkwardly. I just that always, you know, freaks me out when I see that happening. But I mean, did this have anything to do with him playing in the WBC, really?
It did in that obviously there was that celebration that you probably wouldn't have in spring training.
You weren't going to celebrate a win like that in spring training. I get that. But, I mean, I don't know. That is just it's so fluky that I don't know that you can say, yeah, that's the reason why. You know, when you look back on the next WBC and somebody's fretting over whether or not their player should play in it or not, is everybody going to go, well, Edwin Diaz, perfect example of why you shouldn't do that when – that really had nothing to do with playing baseball.
No, you can see both sides of it. You can see if you're on the side that's cautious and I don't want my guys out there, you're going, well, what are the chances he's hopping up and down in a giant group of players celebrating something that happened in spring training? Probably none. It's probably not going to happen. There's no reason that would happen. He could get hurt in spring training, just like any other player can. But I think it's acceptable then. You're still bummed. You still hate it. You still feel terrible for the player. But They're preparing for their team, for their season. I think there's something that's more palatable about it. If Julio got hurt in spring training versus in this, I think fans might take it a little better. You'd still be devastating. Yeah. But I think you might just go, well, he was diving for a ball. You know, you saw him make a diving catch, a brilliant catch. I don't know if you saw that last night. But say he laid out for it the way he did, and he pulls a rib, you know, something in the rib cage gets hurt because he dove on his stomach. Mm. What if he does that in a spring training game? Are we going to get mad that he's playing in spring training? They have to get ready for the season in one way or another. They have to go out there and play. So there's, I just think it's more, I just feel like if you're playing for your team, if you're out there preparing for your team season, that it, maybe it's more acceptable to a fan if the worst happens like this.
Yeah, well, you know what, though? The players are so fired up, seemingly anyway. The guys that are playing in the WBC, they're loving it. It's huge for, you know, for them to play for their country. It's a big deal. I don't think you're ever going to get the players away from that. You know, I don't think – I just think you would get too much backlash if you're a manager, a GM, or a skipper that you're going to hold your guy out of the WBC Classic. I don't think that's gonna happen.
Yeah, and it's not the first time something, you know, maybe celebration-wise, it's the first time in the WBC. Drew Smyly was the classic case of a guy who went to the WBC, suffered an injury, but it was from pitching. It wasn't from a celebration or anything, and it obviously impacted what happened out here with the Mariners. But it's we've seen guys get hurt celebrating before. You can go back to football and who was it? Bill Gramatica, Martin's brother.
Yeah.
Who was out there doing his dance and blew out his knee. And then, well, then there's Kendrys Morales.
Gus Frerotte, who
head-butted
the wall. Head-butted the wall. But, yeah, you know, it's funny. My wife had a friend. She was like, yeah, I was at this game with the Angels, and this guy hit a walk-off home run, and then he came and jumped on home plate and broke his ankle. And I'm like, you're at the Kendrys Morales game?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, that was a freaky, weird thing. So, I mean, I think you just write it off to that.
Yeah, it just
– is that what Mookie Betts thinks?
Well, let's hear what Mookie Betts thinks about this whole thing.
You know, those things, you know, that can happen to anybody at any given time, and I can always try and place blame on the WBC, but, you know, that's just a freak accident that could happen to anyone at any given time. And so, but to echo what Mike said, man, this is so much fun. It's so much fun. And, you know, I this is way better than getting four bats on the backfields. I mean, you know, this is just, you know, so I encourage those who are watching, you know, come join, come play in for Team USA, because this is a lot of fun.
Yeah, he's not wrong. He's not wrong in getting four at bats on the backfield. Yeah, but then the counter argument would be that wouldn't happen on the backfield.
You're not getting hurt.
There'd be no jumping up and down and celebrating. So,
well,
you know,
I think it's interesting how he's like, yeah, it's tragic, but man, this is so much fun. This is great. I mean, I feel like that's how most players think about it.
Yeah.
So if you know, if you're a GM, like I said, or you know, like service, he's going to tell no, you can't, all because of one guy blew his knee out during a celebration. I would say this, just don't celebrate.
Yeah.
Just, okay. Just calm down.
Handle your business. Can we hear the play-by-play? I don't know how they cover this quickly, if we could hear that.
Hopefully Edwin Diaz isn't really hurt. He might be. Gosh, that would be the only thing that could put a damper on a great night for baseball. Great win for Puerto Rico.
Yeah. So
the teller tendon?
Yeah.
What it was?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
He struck out Teoscar Hernandez, I believe, to end the game there. So, yeah, that was – I think they were just as in the dark as everybody else, because you see him celebrating. Everybody converges on the mound, and then the next thing you know, everybody just starts backing up. You're like, what's going on here? So just brutal and – Edwin Diaz, a great guy, a great player, great pitcher. So that is such a huge bummer, and we'll see how his team moves forward. But man, that was jarring, and you could see it on the faces of all the players out there. All right, coming up, a recruiting target of Quandre Diggs is no longer available. We'll talk about what it means for the Seahawks coming up. It's Wyman and Bob live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Coming up at 3 o'clock, Paul Moyer will join us on the program, so stay tuned for that. It's Wyman and Bob live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center, Seattle Sports on 710. We've got the Seahawks GM, John Schneider, joining us at 4 o'clock today, so you definitely want to stay tuned for that. And our buddy John Morosi will join us at 5:30, get his take out there on the WBC. He's in the middle of everything.
Well, he's so fired up for WBC.
Oh, he loves this. Was he at that game, do you know, Lefko?
Which one?
The one where Diaz got hurt. Where was that at?
No, that was in Miami.
That was Miami. Arizona. Okay, he's in Arizona. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll talk to him about that and everything else going on, but he'll join us at 5:30 today, so make sure you stay tuned. Meanwhile, any of you that are on Twitter and you follow Quandre Diggs, you know he's taking on a new role. He is the champion recruiter. He's making a hardcore push for a number of players, most notably Bobby Wagner. I mean, it's just one tweet after another of a picture of the two of them together. He's tagging the Seahawks, and you know, anything that has anything to do with Bobby, he's putting it out there. The other guy I'd say who would be a number two on that list of recruiting targets was Darius Slay. Obviously, they know each other from their time in Detroit. Mm-hmm. They're clearly still good friends because a lot of back and forth on Twitter and, you know, him tagging the Seahawks again and different things. Well, it looked like Darius Slay was going to be available out there. And we were talking about, well, geez, if you're, you know, Mike Jackson or Trey Brown or any of these other guys, how do you feel about your safety out there actively recruiting another cornerback to come in here, you know, in a very obvious and hardcore way on social media? Well, they don't need to worry about it now because the story came out that he is now expected to go back to the Eagles. And he even, Slay, tweeted out something along the lines of, "It's like I never left," or something like that.
I thought he was going to thank Quandre for the ups.
He may have since then, but he sent one out that basically implied he's headed back to Philly. So, you know, you still have the guys we just mentioned. They put the exclusive rights tender on Mike Jackson. You've got Trey Brown. Kobe Bryant is your slot guy. Is that a spot you think needs attention, though? Do you look at it? I'm trying to look at it from Quandre's perspective, going, okay, yeah, it's his buddy. He loves the guy. He thinks he's a great player. Totally get that. Is he looking at that as a need? Like, hey, we're short here.
No, I think he wants his buddy to come play football with him. I mean, I think, and you know, I thought better of this last night after I said it yesterday. I was just kind of reacting on the fly, and I was like, well, how do you feel if you're the other corners? And, you know, the thing is about Quandre, he's such a good teammate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so he wouldn't say something like that. unless he thought it was cool with his teammates and everything. So he's just more than anything, you know, trying to get his buddy out here. Darius Slay, I mean, he's going into his 11th year. I mean, it's not like he's a spring chicken, but, you know, he's been, what, five-time Pro Bowler, All-Pro one time, and he's a good player, no question. I think more than anything, it was just Quandre talking about his buddy, wants his buddy to come here and hang out with him and play football.
Yeah, there was a guy that tweeted out all these numbers, you know, attached to him. 51 targets in 14 games, 3.6 yards per catch, 33 catches in 40, you know, all these stats attributed to Darius Slay that show how good he is. And then, you know, Diggs retweeted it and said, seem like damn good numbers to me.
Yeah.
You know, I like that he's that active. I love that he's actively trying to get guys to come to this team and play. I mean, he's excited. He's invested. I like seeing a guy that's that invested with what's going on. And then he must be getting married because I'm looking at his Twitter page now, and his last tweet was, got to enjoy the rest of my wedding week. So he's been doing this on his wedding week. He's out there recruiting players. That's a guy who's devoted. That's a guy who's committed to this team, by God.
Well, hopefully he's got like a wedding planner, and his wife-to-be is taking care of most of that. That's kind of how I was. I was like, I'll be in charge of paying for it, and then I'm going to do the honeymoon.
Set that up.
Shannon set everything else up. So, yeah, maybe that's what he's got going on there. But, no, Quandre's such a good dude, man. He's such a good leader. And just think about last year at this time. We didn't really know if he was going to make it back or not.
Yeah.
I mean, he had 2021 left the field on a stretcher. And so, yeah, good dude, though, man. Really, really good guy. I think he just wanted to – he's pretty much – he hasn't been choosy. You know, like he's been like, hey – this guy, let's get this guy.
Yeah.
I think it's typically his friends, right?
Well, it seems like, especially Bobby. But just as far as the position goes, do you look at it as, hey, you feel good about what they've got there? Or do you feel like, they wouldn't hurt him to bring in some more talent?
The way I feel about it is that on a normal year, I would say, yeah, it would be okay to bring in some more talent. Why not? We don't know if Trey Brown is going to work out. Love Trey Brown, but, you know, I don't know what's going on with him.
And last year was weird.
Get the injury. It was very weird, especially in that Ram game that they played at Los Angeles where he got in and he was starting to play really well, and then all of a sudden he disappeared. So, but, yeah, I like Mike Jackson a lot. And then, you know, on the other side, of course, you feel like you don't have to worry about that corner if you're going to re-sign him and everything for another 10 years with Tariq Woolen. But he could be like a Darius Slay type of player. But, you know, typically I would say, yeah, let's get something there. But now with all of the – I mean, you need a center. We talked about linebackers this week. We talked about, you know, really if you want to get another guard, that would be a good deal.
You need a running back.
Not even talking about defensive tackles yet, you know.
Yeah.
So – I feel like maybe not this year. I feel like they've got some good guys. Maybe they draft a guy late, you know, in the fifth round or something like that to address that. But I feel like that's not a position that's really needs to be addressed.
Yeah, it feels like for a defense that really was problematic, that we had a lot of complaints about, there was a lot of concern about, that's kind of the one spot on the team you feel like, yeah, you're okay. You're okay. Maybe it doesn't mean you can't have better players. I don't think you've got the best cornerbacks in the world. I think Tariq Woolen obviously looks like he's a star in the making. Could you improve the other side? Probably. You know, we'll see what happens with Trey Brown or Kobe Bryant. But it's probably the least of your concerns when it comes to position groups, I would say.
I think it's kind of funny the way you put that we're getting lots of complaints about the defense. let's get John down here again. Hey, John. So we're getting lots of complaints. What are we going to do about this?
There's been a lot of people unhappy with what we saw from the defense last year. Actually, the past few years, really. But, yeah, that was the biggest sore spot, was it not, was the defense. So
it was. It really was. That was where, you know, and I think it was the setup of disappointment because we thought, okay, Ken Norton, loved him, great guy. He just wasn't getting it done. And then, you know, they bring in all the help and everything. You thought, okay, good deal. Let's see what happens. And it just didn't work out, especially in the run game.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully these are just the first of a few moves that'll work their way towards a much better product next year in terms of defense. All right, we'll get his thoughts on the moves the Seahawks have made and everything else going on in the world of sports as Paul Moyer will join us next year. We continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.